Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Geek Therapeutics Podcast. I am Cornell Kritz here with my co-host, Alicia. And we have a special guest today of Abe Klein.
Well, let's see here. I work in the Philadelphia area in Wayne, Pennsylvania, as a licensed professional counselor. I specialize in working with adolescents, teens, young adults, and I have a subspecialization of working with geeky clientele, as you know, for the show. But within specific areas of competence, I do best with anxiety, general life issues, transitional struggles, finding meaning, and just dealing with the strange concept that is life, especially when I can utilize, you know, media.
Sweet. Yeah. That's a pretty great intro.
That Follow was that a great up, intro.
Cornell.
I don't have a... I'm blank.
Cornell's blank. Let's start... Okay, so... There's a lot to unpack professionally, and since you have a you've got this geek culture certification and specialty, what is it that brought you to a point in your life where you knew that you were a geek? Was it a TV show? Was it a character? Was it a comic book? Where is your...
So you're talking about in the context of just my own life, not in the context of using this in my career.
Yep.
So that's correct, a good question. I've never really thought about this. I think it was less of an aha moment and more of a phase transition over time, because I started to notice that a lot of the media I was interested in was far and away from what most of my peer group was into. You know, in the context of TV shows, I started getting into anime. And, you know, at that time it was, oh, what, you're watching those Chinese cartoons? What's wrong with you? Or, oh yeah, isn't that the hentai? You know, which did not make it easy for me to make friends in school. And then in the context of video games, you know, I'm over here playing games like Final Fantasy, Dynasty Warriors, Katamari, stuff like that. And anyone I knew who actually did play video games, because this is before... this was as widespread as it is now. Anyone I knew was either playing sports games or Call of Duty, neither of which really ever held my interest. Not that there's anything wrong with those games. Different strokes for different folks. Just, once again, different tastes and the social difference that came with it. Does that make sense?
Very much so.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I wasn't the person playing Final Fantasy. I was the person playing everything except fantasy games because I didn't understand them. And it was up until, oh my gosh, 2017 before I let my real fantasy geek flag fly outside of Lord of the Rings and a few other very, you know, mainstream nerdy things where it was okay for everybody to be nerdy. So I absolutely understand that game split that we all had in the 90s. Because I feel like in the 90s, it was you were either playing like the car racing game or the game where they like have you go do things in Vegas. I don't even know what that's called. Grand Theft Auto, is that what it's called? You can, like, I'm aging myself and I'm so old I don't even know what it's actually called. But yeah, I totally understand like that geek moment. In those really hard moments to find friends, did you have a core group of people that were nerding out with you in those areas?
Long and short, yes, gradually over time. So I had these two very close friends in my childhood, Max and Michael. And they both, I feel like the three of us cultivated these interests in one another as we moved forward. You know, one of us would get this game and bring it and say, hey, this is really cool. And then either all three of us would be playing it or two of us would be playing it. or something like that, depending on consoles, because, you know, not both of them didn't have the same consoles. I distinctly remember Michael always had the PlayStation consoles. Max always had the Nintendo consoles. And this was before Xbox. And so I vacillated a bit between the two and what I had, but most of the time I'd be at one of their houses because they tended to have the better tech. And so, and also both of them had the best computer setups for computer gaming, particularly Max, whole family of tech and video game loving people. So, you know, I distinctly remember part of that cultivation of fantasy media, geeky media, was going over to Max's house, playing the various MMOs that his dad would get and then introduce him into, and then introduce me to, playing games like Ultima Online. There was one other game. I can see it in my mind. It was another MMO. It was, came out either around or before EverQuest. So once again, I am dating myself in this, but it was just getting to play these games and to connect with another person in this way was very exciting. And this was before the internet. And I feel that the internet is what one of the main reasons why geek culture, geeky media in the world today, but especially in the context of America, has proliferated as beautifully as it has, because I can connect with someone out in Oklahoma who can then introduce me to this series that I would never have experienced otherwise, had I not spoken to this person in Oklahoma that I would never have met if not for the internet.
That's so awesome.
That is awesome.
We talk about the negativity of the internet all the time. Parents come in with their child. They want to talk about, you know, this addiction. They're not having friends. But what we don't see is, look at us. We're kids of the 90s. We know what AIM is. We know what when AOL created a chat room. And then all of a sudden we had Instant Messenger. And we started meeting people around the world and the globe. And those started to become friends. And I have people in my own life who have friends that they met in a game. Yep. All the way across the world, like in Ireland, and a friend in Nova Scotia, they would never have met those people if it wasn't for a game, and they're lifelong friends. And so I love that you brought that up, because nobody has really talked about that yet. We haven't really gotten into the video game internet conversation, because we've been talking about tabletop and we've been talking about different certifications, but video gaming and the internet changed our lives. For anybody who grew up in the 90s with an encyclopedia, watching the internet unfold, it changed us. There's some crime that came, right? And we've had to deal with that. But it really did open up the expanse to be able to interact with people like us, hundreds and thousands of miles away, and built relationships, just like you said. And I find that to be the most beautiful thing about the internet. And even today, I have friends, you know, you call them your Facebook friend, right? You find a group that you're in that you like, and you forge these relationships based on common interests. And when something happens to them, you're like, oh my gosh. And then you bring it up, and your partner, your wife, your friends are all, who is that? You're all, Susie. How do you know Susie? Facebook, duh.
Internet.
And it's just like, what? Yep. And it's amazing. I'm so glad you brought that up. How did you find Geek Therapeutics? We're talking about the internet, and I don't know, did you find it on the internet? Was your computer listening to you?
It was back in 2019, I believe, a little before the plague. And I can't remember exactly how I found it. It was either I saw an advertisement on Facebook, or a friend of mine said, hey, there's webinars for using geeky media in therapy. And I saw it and I said, oh, this is something I've been doing. I'm going to explore this to learn how to do it better. And then it's funny because within maybe a week or three of that, five different people were posting that same advertisement on my wall saying, hey, have you heard about this? Have you heard about this? Have you heard about this? Same thing happened when Geek Therapeutics started the Therapeutic Game Master program. Within like 2 to 3 weeks, five different people. Hey, Abe, have you seen this? Hey, Abe, have you seen this? Hey, Abe, I know you're interested in this.
Abe, what cohort were you in for the Therapeutic Game Master
17.
Program? Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, I loved it. It was fascinating. And also, it's, you know, it's interesting because I like the cohort system of it, because I've always heard friends of mine in grad school doctorate programs who talk about being in cohorts. And in my grad school experience, I didn't have that cohort experience. And I feel, looking back, like I may have missed out as a result of that. So now I have that experience on a smaller scale, and it's really validating.
I don't know if it's a smaller scale, because in grad school, I didn't have a cohort either. I called them the cohort because they were people that I saw in class maybe once or twice, but there was really no core group of individuals going through the program together. And when I look at cohorts in other, like in the social work doctoral program, those people are between like 10 and 20 people. They're small. So I think our cohorts are probably pretty good if we were looking at like specialized programming. If we were in back like at grad school and having that specialized program, I think you had absolutely. A cohort experience. If you feel like you have it, I think you got it.
Oh no, I feel like I have this. I did not have a cohort experience in grad school. I had a cohort experience in the tabletop certification program, and that was very. That gave me that cohort experience I never had. And I love that, especially because throughout my, well, as of this March, it will be 6 years post-grad in my career. I have had very few professional connections that are at my level that I connect with. Mm. I've always, in a lot of my professional circles, for a variety of reasons, felt kind of like an outsider. And here I did not feel like an outsider. I felt immediately upon going in welcome and connected, you know?
And that's amazing. And when it came to the cohort system itself that we use, what was your favorite takeaway or experience within it? Was there a guest session that you really enjoyed, or was there something from your core session that you really enjoyed?
Let's see here. I love the webinars. Fascinating stuff. Wonderful. I like that I was able to do that on my own time while doing other things, watching this, listening to this, and being able to really consume that in my own way. I loved getting to play the games with my cohort, being able to look at the therapeutic aspects of things, getting to have experience running games and watching my cohort members, who are my friends, running these games. And that was really helpful to me because something I've come to learn about myself over the past year. You know the concept of auditory versus visual versus kinesthetic learning?
Mm-hmm.
I've always said I'm an auditory learner. I've come to understand I'm actually a kinesthetic learner. But the problem is, a lot of the time, I have trouble motivating myself to do the kinesthetic work. So it's very annoying for me because I'll say, no, I'm an auditory learner and I'll try to listen to things and I'll learn, but I won't learn as well as I do by doing. And then I have a mental barrier to the doing. And this put me in a situation where I had to do and thus learned better from it. And it was a great environment to do so because I feel that for me as a kinesthetic learner, as a person, I struggle with a fear of making mistakes, a fear of doing something wrong. And I believe that one of the best ways to challenge that struggle is to have a safe space to mess up that will not have major consequences that can give you the space to learn. We learn more in failure than we do in success. And as such, this was that space for me, and I loved that. Also, it gave me more like opportunity to watch people do this in action, which I feel that I have struggled with because I have not had as much exposure to this. And it's hard for me to, at times, sit down and envision what therapeutic sessions in the future will look like. And that holds me back from moving forward. So this gave me that opportunity to continue to build my mental database on what this can and will look like, giving me a greater sense of confidence.
Wow. You know, I think that's one of the best answers we've had for that yet. That's really awesome.
I think the journey is great. I love it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. What, well, to follow up on that, what has been your favorite training to date?
Oh. And it doesn't have to be in the Game Master program. Yeah. If it's been any of our, I don't know if you've done any of the other certifications or if you've taken, if you've gone through the specialties, but it could be anything. It could be any of the live trainings. It could be any of the live trainings that have been moved into the client management system, anything. It doesn't have to be just in TGM, but if it is in TGM, that's great too.
So generally speaking, there have been two that have stuck out to me the most. One that I think I've utilized the most in my work that I didn't expect it to connect with me as much as it did. And then the other is what kind of kicked off my interest in the therapeutic GMing. So the first of the two, and now as a side note to this, something I've come to understand about myself as I've moved through my career is that every so often I learn about aspects of theoretical orientations, approaches to therapy, and I'll see it and I'll learn about it and I'll say, hey, wait, that's a thing? I do that. Huh. So where that came in, that has come in very often when looking at cognitive behavioral therapy, but particularly I attended the webinar on geeky metaphors for ACT, which is part of what kicked off my interest in ACT. And I've been starting to explore that more professionally. And I have been using metaphors in the context of my work to help explain things, to help concepts to solidify for years. And so that was very validating to me to say, hey, that thing you're doing, you're doing a good thing. Keep doing it. Here's how to do it better. Here's also how to do it in this particular like sphere. And I know that one of them was on the concept of mindfulness. Are y'all familiar with Steven Universe?
Yes.
So one of the metaphors was for mindfulness, and it was, well, it wasn't a metaphor. It was an example of this ACT concept in geeky media, which was the musical segment, Here's a Thought. I have since then literally sat down in sessions with clients and we're talking about mindfulness. And I'm like, all right, we're it's movie day. We're going to roll in the CRT television. And I will pull up this video and say, here is a great way to explain mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And so that was fantastic for me. And I know that I've used a couple other concepts from that. I'm not sure off the top of my head, but that is the one aspect of it that really screams at me the most. And why it does, as I said, it validates the fact that I use these metaphors so often in my work to help clients who understand these things. I always say, you know, if you can put something in a way that will connect with somebody, it is more likely to stick.
Yeah.
And then the training that really kicked off my interest, I forget which instructor was doing it, but it was the D&D or tabletop role-playing games for working with mood disorders in older populations. And I thought that was the coolest thing, how the speaker talked about his work in retirement homes doing this. And, you know, at the time it got me to have ideas because I thought, a lot of people in retirement homes are, you know, bored out of their minds. And I thought, hey, this would be a great thing I could do in the future. This would be super awesome. And on top of that, at the time I had a personal connection because around then, an aunt of mine had gone into a retirement herself at much to her chagrin. She was very independent, very, very much reveled in her independence. And to her, in a way, that home meant a removal of some of that independence. And I thought, I wonder if this is something Shirley would enjoy. I wonder if this is something that people like Shirley would enjoy, because I'm certain that Shirley is not the only person going into a situation like this who is having these feelings. I wonder how I could address some of these feelings through this game. And then as a side note to that, I remember I was talking with someone about this in one of the training programs I did. I can't remember if it was in Geek Therapeutics, or I also did the therapeutic game master training with the Bodana group. And I remember at some point we were talking about this topic and working with that population. And I said, oh, what system would I use? What setting would I use? Because I wonder whether or not, you know, this population will connect with fantasy, medieval, or even futuristic. And then someone said, Western. And the stars aligned. My thoughts began to connect. And I'm like, this is perfect. This is perfect. This is a generation who grew up with the spaghetti Western.
Yep.
I could go in there and say, all right, listen, you're going to be a sheriff of a town, this and this and that, blah, 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 bandits and train heists and all kinds of stuff. You can get to live out these experiences in the way that you want to.
That's awesome. And it actually, that's when you were like, what can we connect with? And my brain went right to spaghetti Westerns. Exactly. And, or the, Hardy Boys, you know, stuff like that. Especially that generation, they love their murder mysteries. They love Miss Marple, you know, Poirot, stuff like that. So
Columbo.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Have you done it? Have you been able to find yourself in a nursing home and guiding individuals through these experiences?
Not yet. So generally speaking, I have not gotten to run games professionally yet. I have only done it a little bit with friends. And what I've said to myself is my current track to doing this is I need a little more experience running this for fun. Because I've already had a little bit of experience. I've had some experience between the two programs of running it for therapeutics. And it's one of those situations of I need to get my sea legs before I'm comfortable properly sailing. So what? My goal is over the next couple months to run a couple games, some one shots, some short games. I already know that I have a bunch of people in my life who are ready and raring to go and very excited for the idea of me DMing and GMing for them. My young cousin, who I am slowly cultivating into a proper geek, is very interested. We've been building a character for him, and watching him get hype about this is so validating to me, because when I was his age, he's 13 now, I did not have someone in my life who could bring me these things, introduce me to these things, because anyone in my life who wasn't those two friends of mine, and this includes the adults in my life, would look down on me for this. You know, I felt like an outsider in my own home because I didn't like football and I couldn't connect with my father about it. And so all in all, I feel good being able to be there for him in that way, but bringing it back around, I also have a couple of my fellow therapists at my group practice that have, I said to them actually literally yesterday, hey, I need some experience running this. I would love to run it for some fellow professionals. Would y'all be interested? And a couple of them said, yeah, totally, blah, blah, blah. Let's set up a time. So all in all, once I get that experience, I am going to set up a group. And I'm very excited.
On the flip side of that coin, have you gotten any pushback from outside sources about using geek therapy?
A little bit here and there. I know that I would say that the greatest amount of pushback that I've gotten has been from a family member of mine who worries about my usage of the word geek in the context of this, geeky or this and that, and who is worried about me overbranding myself in that way, because they worry that if I do so, that will alienate potential clients who don't fall into that realm. And, you know, I hear that and I definitely understand that. And I keep that in mind as I look at this concept in how I brand myself, because I have my profile on the website and on our company's website. And I have the geeky media therapeutic stuff in there, but it is not the thing. It is not everywhere. It is a part of me. It is not everything. And I feel very good about that because now I don't need to hold that aspect of myself back. For many years, I felt like I can't be forward about this in my professional realm. I cannot wear this badge, so to speak. Now I feel like I can. Particularly, one of the most validating experiences I've had over the past 2 years, because in my previous job before the current one, I didn't have a profile on a website. It was a community behavioral health kind of place. And now where I am now, we have profiles on our website. So a client can come in and say, yes, I like what Joe has on his profile. I would like Joe, assuming Joe's taking clients. And I have had multiple clients come in and say, either the client themselves or if it's one of my teen clients, the parents say, yeah, we saw your profile and said, him, I want him. We specifically want him for that reason. So that's super validating to me because, you know, years ago, I was made fun of for this stuff. Now I'm making money off of it and helping people. But back to the pushback, on the whole, nothing major. Some light confusion occasionally. I know one person who I started working with had looked at my profile after they had been assigned to me by the intake person. And they read my profile and they said to me, yeah, I was wondering, did they think I was a geek? And I said, not necessarily, blah, blah, blah. It's a case of just, that's a part of what I do, not all of. And it's interesting because in working with my non-geeky clients, I still find myself occasionally bringing geeky concepts in. Two that I have used in this context are, so one of my favorite things to do is to talk about the random and chaotic nature of our existence is talking about how I always say that life is a series of dice rolls. And I talk about that in a lot of areas, but to put it simply, I talk about how pretty much everything we do requires a dice roll to see whether or not we succeed or fail. And then at any given point, you can roll a one and fail. At any given point, you can roll a 20 and succeed. You can do everything wrong and still succeed. You can do everything right and still fail. And then I go into the whole concept of modifiers and this and that. But, you know, I always talk about that with any, not always, but I will often talk about that with any clientele, regardless of whether or not they are geeky. And then sometimes I can use geek adjacent media. I say geek adjacent because it's, well, feel free to tell me if I'm using this wrong, because maybe this is kind of that still weird gatekeepy part of my mind that I've been trying to kind of shove out as we turn gatekeeping into, what's the opposite of gatekeeping? Gate opening?
Yeah, we'll go with that. I actually haven't.
Gate, kicking the door down and telling and taking people, picking them up and throwing them through the now open gate because we all need to enjoy this media. But, you know, not everyone, but a lot of people have seen Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, if I talked to the average client about Iron Man, they're going to know nothing about that. Now the average client is going to know about Iron Man. So if I want to use that in a context, more clients than not, even if they are not geeky, are likely to know about it and be able to connect with them. So I've worked with non-geeky clients, and something I will talk about in the context of families and peer groups is the idea of a party system, of how we all, especially in families, we make up for each other's strengths and weaknesses. And so I, you know, with a geeky client, I'd say, okay, well, you know, one of you is the mage, one of you is the paladin, one of you is the rogue, blah, 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 and equate that to aspects of themselves in the context of their unit. And so I was trying to use this with a client who is not geeky, who is not engaged in the more geeky media, but they knew the Avengers. And I said, okay, well, you know, you look at Hawkeye, he fights at range. The Hulk gets up close and, you know, throws things around. They make up for each other's weaknesses. It'll be harder for the Hulk to fight a flying enemy than it would be for Hawkeye to fight a flying enemy, versus it would be harder for the Hulk to fight this, it would be harder for Hawkeye to fight this hulking armored behemoth that the Hulk could get up in its face and beat it up and go toe to toe with. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So all in all, I feel that a lot of the concepts we use in the context of geek therapeutics are not necessarily solely connected to geeky media, but media as a whole. And as such, how I will tend to use that with clients, if I cannot connect on a media that I typically use, more often than not geeky media, I will look at what are the media that they do know do connect with.
That's smart. And that's fantastic. You're using modern day pop culture as a reference point for what it means to be a geek, because everyone has this stereotypical view of being a geek, but people geek about different things. Some people geek about, you know, football. Some people geek about cooking, you know, or baking, knitting, sewing, crochet, any of that. It can be considered a geek artifact if it's something that they're passionate about.
Yes. And the word geek, you know, once again, going back to that whole concept of the pushback, why I got that pushback from people in my life, predominantly older generations who would have that, would hear that word and have great amounts of negative connotations. They were concerned about those negative connotations in the context of myself and my career. And that's totally valid. I am glad that I have people in my life who care about me enough to say, hey, watch out for this thing. I'm worried about this thing, even if they're dead wrong. Like, the thought is there, the warmth is there, the love is there, and that's what matters. And I feel that one general exploration for me as a person has been, how do I listen to people, particularly listen to people who are my perceived elders, superiors, what have you, listen to them and pick out and dissect what they say and say, hey, what can I take from this and learn from this, rather than just, well, what they say goes and I need to do this. And that for me was, okay, how do I utilize this in a way that does not potentially set off alarm bells for me?
And that is, I think, the hurdle with anyone who has a specialty, that people put you in that stereotyped or culturally observed box, so to say.
Yes.
And it's fantastic that you're finding ways to work around that and get around that. But we are just about out of time. So I want to give you a few minutes to plug anything that you want for your personal practice and or anything you are really passionate and geeky about right now. So the floor is yours, Abe.
Put me on the spot. If you're in the Philadelphia area, particularly in the western suburbs, come check out Behavioral Health Choices. That's where I work, especially if you have availability during the morning or the early afternoon. My late afternoon spaces are premium real estate, and I reserve them solely for my high school age clientele. So if you're able to make it earlier on in the day, let's go. And beyond that, let's see here. Really excited about the new Borderlands game coming out next month. If any Borderlands fans are out there listening to this, but the new, what was it? The Tiny Tina game
coming. Tiny Tina. Yeah.
Yeah. I am.
Tiny Tina's Wonderland.
Yes. Which is based on the Tiny Tina assault on something, Dragon Keep or something. I don't remember what it's called. The DLC they had made for Borderlands 2 that was all e-based, which ironically, going back to the topic of today's discussion, is essentially a tabletop therapy session because it all focuses around Tina dealing with her grief over the loss of Roland. Spoiler alert, people who don't know, Roland dies. Miss him. But yeah, very excited for that. Very excited to see how that potentially continues to add to the social zeitgeist of D&D and tabletop role-playing games in our culture, because as y'all know, we have seen a massive rise in it over the past 5-6 years. And I could definitely see this continuing to stoke those flames on a smaller level. And I look forward to seeing how Borderlands continues to do their take on the topic.
Abe, awesome. You're awesome. Thank you for giving us such great tidbits of knowledge, a real glimpse into who you are as an individual. And for those listening, I hope that you can hear his excitement and gumption and the way I assume you are in your sessions. And if I were to find my way into one of your sessions as a client, I think I would have been very happy knowing that you are there for young children, teens, and adults, and the teens' parents, because I think they also, through their children, get a little bit of the therapeutic process when they're in those sessions. And so I want to thank you for coming and spending time with us. And if there's anything that you ever want to come and chat about again, please know that you are always welcome to be on the show. And we look forward to hearing more about this next year's journey of bringing tabletop and other experiences into your practice. Everybody, that is it for us today at Geek Therapeutics. We are super excited that you've been here. If you are a geek therapist, a dungeon master, a social worker, or anybody in the helping fields in volunteerism and want to talk to us about what you're doing in your space in the geeky world, please reach out to us at our email address at media@geektherapeutics.com. And we would love to schedule time with you. And until next time, everybody, be kind, be geeky, and always hang out. John? Damn it. All right. That's going to be cut.
You're fine.
That's getting cut. That's the only cut we've had in 2 weeks. Thank God this isn't live.
And in a related note on that, something I want to confirm. I think there may be a slight misunderstanding. I have not completed the cultural competency certification.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay,
no worries.
Because I know that was referenced earlier, and I want to make sure we're on the same. I am working on that.
Cornell, take us out.
Actually.
Cornell, take us out.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for this episode of Geek Therapeutics Podcast. Thank you very much for checking us out here. Make sure to follow us on your chosen podcast platform. And look for, if you're on Spotify, look for the question that we attach to each one of these episodes and give us feedback. We will be answering those questions possibly in a separate episode or post-episode type format where we answer your questions. So we look forward to that. We will see you same time next week, same channel. Take care.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Yep.